It lays the predicate and the foundation for the development of a weather satellite that will permit man to determine the world's cloud layer and ultimately to control the weather, and he who controls the weather will control the world.
We have reached the end of 2018, a year of profound events and exponentially increasing concerns about the horizon that lays before us. Can we as a society collectively rise above all the forces and factors that are doing their best to control, blind, and silence us? And about silencing us, I've repeatedly pointed out that Google has recently completely deleted the geoengineeringwatch.org website from a Google search on the geoengineering term. To clarify again, under the geoengineering term. Searching our actual website name will, of course, still lead to our website, but people that are new to this subject don't know the website name. They're simply searching the term, and now they can't find a source of data to expose the climate engineering insanity and the cover-up. Certainly, Geoengineering Watch is only one of many sites and sources that are being censored on many critical subjects. The Bing search engine does not seem to be censoring yet. DuckDuckGo also seems to be honestly reporting search results. They should be used, and not Google. More on truly unbelievable censorship. Listen to this. GeoengineeringWatch.org has established communications with an attorney in Florida that was disbarred because of his attempts to discuss climate engineering and 9/11. This attorney said this, and I quote, "Two attorneys sought to have me ordered into psychological evaluation following my correspondence with the Florida Department of Environmental Protection in 2013 regarding chemtrails, aka geoengineering, in Florida. The medical doctor they sent to me was named George N. Northrup from Tampa, Florida, who determined that my, quote, rants over chemtrails, aka climate engineering, and 9/11, roved, in his opinion, that I lacked the requisite mental competency to practice law. I have been a member of Lawyers for 9/11 Truth since 2008. Jeffrey Brown, he went on to say this, Jeffrey Brown is the state of Florida environmental protection attorney who informed me that, quote, chemtrails are harmless water vapor, just contrails, and that my, quote, chemtrail assertion was proof of my mental incompetency. David, the attorney in question, was subsequently disbarred from practicing law in Florida. Stop for a moment to consider the depth of insanity that our so-called society has descended to, that a courageous attorney who is willing to acknowledge the inarguably occurring climate engineering atrocities in our skies, atrocities which mountains of science, film, and photo records confirm, was stripped of his right to practice law in Florida. This attorney has informed GeoengineeringWatch.org and our attorneys that what happened to him is business as usual in Florida, in Florida's so-called legal system. One more update along the same theme. I was invited to a conference call last week that included a Department of Commerce employee, Department of Commerce who GeoengineeringWatch.org attorneys are suing to get our Freedom of Information Act requests, by the way, from NOAA. This DOC employee informed me and others on the call that she and others in the Department of Commerce have been told by their superiors that, yes, climate engineering is in fact ongoing. They were told that it is for the greater good and that the subject is absolutely not to be discussed openly. I'm attempting to produce a follow-up report from this individual. Then there is the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Scientist that once told me to my face, quote, "We all know about it," referring to climate engineering. She said, "We are absolutely alarmed, but we have no First Amendment protection. We don't know what to do." And now, for the record, there is also an illegal federal gag order on all National Weather Service and all National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration employees. An illegal federal gag order. Question: why do so-called educated societies willfully conform to atrocities like forced vaccinations, fluoridated water, chemical-laden foods, endless wars of aggression abroad, catastrophic climate engineering operations, and countless other assaults on our health and the web of life on which our lives completely depend? Why are so many willing to conform to such insanity? Why are so many prone to blindly follow what they have chosen to perceive as legitimate authority, or what they have, without any objective investigation, mistakenly chosen to believe is a legitimate source of information and/or conclusions. In regard to blind and all too often immoral obedience to perceived authority, the so-called Milgram experiments were an alarming testimony of the prevalent human propensity to commit clearly immoral acts, so long as the individual committing those acts believed the acts were requested or approved by an authority figure or source. Although I've addressed the Milgram experiments in the past, I wish to go into more details now because it is completely pertinent to our unraveling society, our collective insanity that we now find ourselves immersed in. Consider this Wikipedia report from the Milgram experiments. The Milgram experiment on obedience to authority figures, conducted in the early 1960s, was a series of social psychological experiments conducted by Yale University psychologist Stanley Milgram. The experiments measured the willingness of study participants, which were men from a diverse range of occupations and with varying levels of education. These subjects were pressed to obey an authority figure who instructed them to perform acts conflicting with their personal conscience. Participants were led to believe that they were assisting in an unrelated mock experiment in which they had to administer electric shocks to a, quote, learner, a test subject. These fake electric shocks gradually increased to levels that would have been fatal had they been real. The experiment found, unexpectedly and alarmingly, that a very high proportion of men would fully obey the completely immoral instructions given to them by what they imagined to be a legitimate authority figure. A more recent human behavioral study similar to the Milgram study was conducted more recently in 2015. The new study concluded that the majority of individuals in modern societies are even more prone to unquestioningly follow immoral instructions from individuals or institutions that they believe to be legitimate authorities. Question: how far have we digressed as a species, as societies? Another question: how many have willfully abandoned their greatest gifts, their senses of reason, virtue, and morality, in exchange for a false sense of security that for many comes with the feeling that they are an accepted member of a group? Should this be described as herd conformist mentality? The website behavioralscientist.org asks this question: did Milgram's experiment demonstrate that humans have a universal propensity to destructive obedience, or that they are merely products of their cultural movement? But what if we ask this question? What if the scales can be tipped in the opposite direction? What if the majority sense of morality and responsibility to the whole can actually be awakened? The behavioralscientist.org report comes to the following conclusion. Quote, given social support, most subjects refused to continue to administer shocks in the Milgram-like experiments, suggesting that social solidarity serves as a kind of defense against destructive obedience to authority. How destructive is that obedience at this critical moment in time? Again, we've reached the end of 2018. What will the world look like by the end of 2019? If an honest and unvarnished investigation of the converging catastrophes we collectively face is conducted, the horizon before us looks dim indeed. If we remain on the current course with the current societal conformity to a criminal power structure and the current behavior from society, near-term planetary omnicide, human extinction, environmental extinction, that's our destination. But here's a question. As global conditions worsen rapidly, is it at least possible that a significant percentage of the human race will make the decision to rise to the occasion when they are faced with a collapse of the paradigm that they formerly knew? Will that force a wake-up if we plant the seeds of awakening with a significant number of the population so that as their world collapses, they understand what happened and why? Will a significant percentage of the human race become willing to come to the conclusion that we, the current generation, do not have the right to loot, plunder, and pillage the planet until there is virtually nothing left, thus leaving little more than a lifeless ball of rock orbiting around an insignificant star for our posterity, thus eliminating any chance of future generations even to be born? Again, question, do we, the current generation, in the desperate attempt to maintain our current paradigm of planetary plunder, have the right to rob future generations of any future whatsoever? Answer, we do not have this right. It is our collective responsibility to do everything in our power to preserve what is yet left of Earth's formerly thriving web of life. We cannot, we must not, continue to take our miracle planet for granted. All of the great spiritual traditions teach us that it is, in fact, our absolute responsibility to be good stewards of this gift of life and of the entire web of life on which our individual lives completely depend. During the last 15 years, I have spent struggling forward in this battle to expose what is unfolding on our planet and to halt the climate engineering insanity. I have often pondered what good I might have been able to do if I had only been completely aware of what was unfolding a decade or two earlier than I became aware of it. But what I have had to face is that even if I and others had attempted to sound the alarm 10 or 20 years earlier than we did, the unfortunate fact is that most are unwilling to face reality until that reality is directly impacting them, directly affecting their lives. But that time is, in fact, now. And let me stop there for a moment to consider, even if our lives were undisturbed and carrying on as we wanted them to be, if we knew that others around the world were suffering horrifically, and in fact, in so many cases, countries that have had their resources stripped from them by our massive military in the name of, quote, American interests, if we knew people were suffering in other countries for that reason or any reason, how could we carry on about our lives as if that wasn't going on? Wouldn't we still have a responsibility to do everything we could to ease that suffering, not just from people, but from wildlife, from the web of life, again, on which all of our lives depend? We do have such a responsibility. And we here in America have been so incredibly shielded from so many dire realities abroad. It just seems like images on a television screen that don't really affect us, but that's not true. We will sink or swim together. Again, in the words of Jacques Cousteau, not only have we forgotten that we are one people, but we have only one planet. And that's an inarguable truth. I don't care what you think of Mr. Cousteau, the truth is the truth, and that is the truth, period. Our collective challenges are not somewhere out on the horizon, no. Converging cataclysms are kicking in the front door, now. The storm is upon us. Exactly how it unfolds still very much depends on what we collectively do or don't do. Before pressing on with this broadcast and the breaking frontline headline reports covered in it, including very recent study data on just how harmful the nanoparticulates from climate engineering fallout are for all of us, particulates in our breathable air column, which each and every one of us are inhaling with every breath we take. I'll get to that report. But first, I want to express at this end of 2018 and beginning of 2019, I want to express my deepest and most sincere gratitude to each and every individual who has summoned the courage to face the gathering storm head on. I want to express my deepest appreciation to every single individual who has chosen to rise to the occasion, to question and investigate the countless official lies and associated crimes. My thanks to every individual who refuses to be a mindless order follower like those that were exposed by the Milgram experiments. Consider this, to thine own self be true. We must answer to our own calling of conscience. numerous breaking and dire frontline reports to cover. Stay tuned. This is Dane Wigington. You're listening to the Global Alert News Hour, episode number 177 for December 29th, 2018. This is a commercial-free program brought to you by geoengineeringwatch.org and paid for by geoengineeringwatch.org. This news hour is broadcast throughout Northern California on 1670 AM, 104.9 FM, and 105.7 FM, Saturday mornings from 6 AM to 7, and now rebroadcast also Sunday mornings, 6 AM to 7. Global Alert News is rebroadcast also on the East Coast by the PRN Radio Network on Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. Recordings of this broadcast can be found at geoengineeringwatch.org under the recent top stories and radio sections. If you're aware of any radio station that may be willing to pick up this commercial-free Global Alert News Hour, please let us know. We will gladly provide the downloads of our broadcast to other stations for free. We only wish to sound the alarm as rapidly as possible. That is our only goal. As always, this announcement, if you're in the Reading area, free geoengineeringwatch.org informational materials can be picked up from Orchard Nutrition. For those not in the Reading area, the latest Geoengineering Watch awareness-raising materials can be ordered from the homepage of geoengineeringwatch.org for our approximate cost of producing and shipping. And here's another way to get materials. If you're anywhere near the Jim Fair events that occur nearly every weekend in many locations throughout the West Coast, you can get free Geoengineering Watch materials. Though I am not able to personally attend these events, there is a geoengineeringwatch.org informational booth with activists at the booths in most locations on most days. And you can get, again, free materials there that can help you very effectively and efficiently sound the alarm. You can get into the Jim Fair events free if you tell them at the ticket booth that you are there to pick up geoengineeringwatch.org materials. Next weekend at Santa Rosa, California, at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds, January 4th to January 6th. That's the next Jim Fair event. Following week in Del Mar, California, January 11th to January 13th at the Del Mar Fairgrounds. Following week in San Rafael, California, at the Marin Center Exhibit Hall. You can search the Jim Fair homepage for the calendar on future events. Help us to sound the alarm. Jim Fair, a very, very dedicated and appreciated ally in this fight, this epic battle to expose and halt climate engineering. Show your support. Show up if you're near those events. Get materials. Help us to sound the alarm. This announcement, again, the most complete climate engineering presentation ever produced by geoengineeringwatch.org, will be posted on Tuesday, January 1st at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. This is a geoengineering A to Z. Very extensive, thorough, comprehensive presentation, our most complete ever from geoengineeringwatch.org. The desperation of the power structure continues. The alteration of YouTube videos that refute official government narratives with banners of official disinformation, like the official, quote, contrail definition lie, that continues to be attached to videos that address the geoengineering issue as if they're a part of the video, which they are not. Again, this is just one more form of unimaginably blatant disinformation by the power structure that's increasingly desperate, just like the censorship of geoengineeringwatch.org from the geoengineering term. Complete censorship, because our site states clearly, did state clearly before Google eliminated it, that our goal, our mission, our purpose was to expose the climate engineering cover-up. And Google and those who control Google simply don't want that to be seen by the public. Here's the question. How many of us are having chronic respiratory issues or know someone that is? Alarmingly, breathing ailments are the least of the dangers posed by the unimaginably small nanoparticulates that are now saturating our breathable air column. Ongoing atmospheric aerosol spraying operations that are part of the geoengineering solar radiation management programs are a primary source of heavy metal and chemical nanoparticulates in our air. So, again, how dangerous are these particles? Consider these dire excerpts from a new nanotechnology study with a subtitle, quote, Toxicity of Nanoparticles. Here are the excerpts. Quote, due to their minute size, nanoparticles can be inhaled or ingested in the primary organs, such as the lungs and stomach, respectively, and from there they can translocate to secondary organs, end quote. Another quote from the study: nanoparticles that are small enough can pass from lungs into the circulatory system and become systemic. End quote. Another quote: nanoparticle cellular uptake and residence in organs results in cytotoxicity. This is toxic to cells. The higher the nanoparticle concentration, the higher the membrane damage. Mitochondria is affected. Nanoparticles have toxic effects upon mitochondria, causing its dysfunction. Impaired mitochondrial function leads to cellular death. Some small nanoparticles are able to pass through the pores of the nucleus membrane and enter the cell nucleus, causing DNA damage, i.e. neurodegenerative disease. End quote. Another quote from the study: biodistribution to organs and tissues, inhalation is the most significant human exposure. Part of inhaled particles will deposit within lungs. Some of the nanoparticles will cross the air-blood barrier of the lungs. These nanoparticles will enter the circulatory system and travel further to organs, becoming systemic. Organs and tissues such as blood, heart, lymph nodes, tonsils, spleen, bones, brain, thyroid, liver, colon, and kidney. Across the board, these particles are in our breathable air column. That's the fact of the matter. The report ends with this statement, or here's one final quote from the report, I should say. There's much more in this report, but here's one final quote from the report. Nanoparticulates made of metals and metal oxides have the highest degree of cytotoxicity, i.e. toxicity to cells. And let's consider this, which the report does not bother to point out. As dire as this scenario is, the fact that we are breathing these nanoparticulates, and as toxic as these particles are, and we know aluminum particles, barium, strontium, manganese, we know this is a part of the mix because we have lab tests from around the globe to prove it. Precipitation tests that prove these particles are in the breathable air column, the primary elements listed in climate engineering patents. Each of these metals is highly toxic in and of themselves, but when they are blended together, we have synergistic toxicity. I've been over that many, many times. The overall toxicity, for example, when aluminum is combined with mercury, can increase 10,000%, 100 times worse. It is a miracle that any of us are walking, talking, and functioning at this point, because we are being bombarded with an unimaginable amount of toxic heavy metals, so much that it is literally changing the forest floor pH values. I've been over that many, many times as well. And these tests are very conclusive of forest floor pH. We have the baselines, and I have them in my possession for Northern California. I have the original USDA baseline soils test for Northern California in my possession, and we know that these baselines have changed unimaginably toward alkaline from the heavy metal loading, from the contamination in our air column and our rain. We have no microbial activity happening on the forest floor. Things aren't decomposing. Trees are dying from the roots to the tips of the trees. And we are inhaling and ingesting all of this as well. And from the brief excerpts I just gave, the lethalness of these particles cannot be overstated, cannot be. And as I've been over again and again, if you seem to yourself that you're less cognitively functional, more forgetful, it's not your imagination. It's not. Stand back and look at the statistics. We have Alzheimer's and dementia is the number one cause of death in some countries now. The number one cause. UK is one of those countries. And certainly the US is probably in that category, but not being disclosed by the criminal CDC, Centers for Disease Control, which is nothing more than a cover-up organization for those in power, as they systematically degrade the functionality of our society, of our cognitive ability, of our health. Systematic assault from countless directions. Those excerpts I just read on the toxicity of nanoparticulates are just a few of this report's dire conclusions. Stop, look up, and consider that we, all of us, are being subjected to what is nothing less than weather and biological warfare. What we so often see being emitted from jet aircraft in our skies is not condensation. The condensation trail lie is perhaps the greatest deception and betrayal ever perpetrated on populations by the power structure and the academic and media institutions the power structure controls. Our so often striped and milky white, hazy skies are a direct result of ongoing covert climate engineering operations that are contaminating every breath we take. The damage done to our health and to the web of life is already, in so many ways, irreparable. Let that sink in. Moving on to frontline reports, this first report has very direct implications related to all the dire data that I just covered. From multiple sources, this report was released yesterday. Washington. The Trump administration announced Friday, i.e. yesterday, a plan designed to make it easier for coal-fired power plants to release directly into the atmosphere more mercury and other pollutants linked to developmental disorders and respiratory illnesses. Completely gutting environmental protection. It's not just climate engineering that's contaminating our atmosphere. Make no mistake about that. Every form of industrial pollution, of which climate engineering is a massive part, intentional pollution, is a problem. And the same toxic heavy metals are being released from the coal-fired power plants, which are now being given carte blanche, or this is at least the direction it's going right now, to dump whatever they want into our skies. And data indicates that coal fly ash, a highly toxic byproduct of coal-fired power plants, may be a base material that the climate engineers are using also, which gives them plausible deniability as to where this pollution is coming from. It appears to be a base material. And what do we have in Washington? An ever more rapid gutting of any form of environmental protection. If you thought anyone in Washington and or the White House was or is in any way concerned about your health, the health of your children, or the rapidly dying web of life, think again. And this is not a partisan issue. Makes no difference what side of the political fence we're discussing. They are simply two sides to the same coin, all part of the same political theater, the same criminal cabal that masquerades as the government of our country. Moving on from ARStechnica.com and other sources. Consider this. The economic impacts of climate change, with no reference to climate engineering, of course, could limit climate change. The economic impacts of climate change could limit climate change. That's the title of this report. What's that mean? The report states this. Lower GDP would mean lower emissions. The report states this. Estimates of the economic impact of climate change have generally been perceived as conservative, failing to capture the full damage done. The inadequate debate is understandable, given the incredible array of factors that have to be not just considered, but quantified. As research has made progress toward more realistic estimates, another interesting question can be asked. What if the worst-case scenario is bad enough that it prevents us from reaching the worst-case scenario? Hope that makes sense. But here's the fact of the matter scenario. Industrialized, militarized civilization in its current form is done. It's in its death throes. It's already collapsing. Climate engineering cannot be maintained indefinitely. The sooner we expose it and halt it, the more we may have left to salvage of Earth's life support system. So it's not a question of if collapse is going to occur. It's already occurring in many places around the globe. The agencies that are tasked with exposing dangers to the public, like the types of dangers I just mentioned, the toxic particles in our air column. Many ask, if this was happening, why wouldn't they tell us? One, again, I emphasize, agencies like CARB, the California Air Resources Board, CDC, Centers for Disease Control, EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, all these agencies are not there to disclose dangers to the public. They are there to hide those dangers. Unimaginable hypocrisy from these agencies. In fact, in regard to the CARB agency, their hypocrisy is truly profound, penalizing farmers and other types of farm equipment, other types of equipment for the particular matter that that equipment emits. Not that that's not bad. It's bad when any type of machinery produces particulate pollution, but CARB ignores the massive climate engineering fallout, which mathematically speaking is a source of particulate pollution perhaps 100,000 times greater. I spoke in front of an auditorium of farmers and other forms of businessmen that were being forced to replace the engines and their equipment because of the particulate pollution. And I spoke in front of the CARB board there, pointing out to this auditorium that CARB was ignoring the climate engineering fallout and making the CARB board state at that meeting that they in fact don't care or don't address the climate engineering fallout because that is not in their jurisdiction by intention. So again, when people ask why wouldn't we be told about this particulate pollution, because the whole system has been designed not to tell us. State air testing equipment is designed to test for generally PM10, 10 microns, at best 2.5 microns. Nanoparticulates are exponentially smaller. They go completely off the radar while all of us get to inhale these particulates. The whole system has been designed to mask the tracks of the climate engineers, period. So how's the environment doing overall? What headlines are we not being told from the front lines of the environment? Let's get back to what's happening at this end of 2018. What's the frontline status? From the bigwobble.org and other sources, this report, here's the title. It's probably the most depressing Christmas story of 2018. Reindeer and caribou herds have declined by 56%, a loss of more than 2.6 million. And let's remember, before I read the excerpt from this report, overall global wildlife populations in the last 40 years down over 60%. What would we do if human populations decline that much? But yet when the wildlife populations decline, no one seems to care, so long as the latest iPhone model is readily available. This is truly a dark time on our planet. From this report, they are one of the most important animals in the already fragile Arctic ecosystem, the magnificent reindeer or caribou. And according to a new report, these animals are the latest to decline. According to a report by National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, despite an increase of vegetation available for grazing, and this is only in the Arctic because there's no ice there in many places now, herd populations of caribou and wild reindeer across the Arctic tundra have declined by 50% in the last two decades. All of these declining species it's a systematic problem, again, a systemic problem, I should say. And back to the insect apocalypse, that's the term that's been used by many mainstream sources now. Issues like that are the true bottom line. If the insects can't survive, we won't be here long, and we're looking at an 80 to 90% terrestrial insect decline globally. Aquatic insect decline, similar figures. The entire population of planet Earth should be in a state of alarm and should be focusing on how to preserve the Earth's life support systems, but instead, the behavior is as if nothing is wrong on the planet. And the reality of what we face won't long be hidden. There's no getting around that fact. There won't be room for denial much longer. More headlines. This one is particularly interesting to consider. Follow me through with this. From FISORG and other sources, this headline of false assurance. This is a very Orwellian report. Follow me through with this. Here's the headline. Wintertime Arctic sea ice growth slows long-term decline. New NASA research has found that increases in the rate at which Arctic sea ice grows in the winter may have partially slowed down the decline of Arctic sea ice cover. Report states this: as temperatures in the Arctic have warmed at double the pace of the rest of the planet, the expanse of frozen seawater that blankets the Arctic Ocean and neighboring seas has shrunk dramatically and thinned over the past three decades. The end of summer Arctic ice extent has almost halved since early 1980s, and a recent NASA study found that since 1958, the Arctic sea ice cover has lost an average of about two-thirds of its thickness, its volume. That's what matters most. And now 70% of the sea ice cap is made of seasonal ice, or ice that forms and melts within a single year. It seems counterintuitive, the report states. How does a weakening ice cover manage to grow at a faster rate during the winter than it did when the Arctic was colder and the ice was thicker and stronger? Question mark. Our findings highlight some resilience of the Arctic sea ice cover, one of the researchers said. If we didn't have this negative feedback, the ice would be declining even faster than it currently is. What have we stated at geoengineeringwatch.org and shown with satellite imagery over and over and over? They are chemically nucleating the sea surface in the Arctic, creating a chemically nucleated slush that forms part of the ice extent, and that's masking the full extent of melt-off. How ridiculous is it to think that all the permanent ice is gone, the Arctic has warmed twice as fast as the rest of the planet, and somehow, miraculously in the winter, the ice is magically recovering faster than it used to. How is that even possible? The warmer it gets, the faster the ice forms in winter? This is ridiculous that climate engineering and chemical ice nucleation is not mentioned. Academia, yet again, betraying the human race and the entire web of life. Let's move on to related reports that will add more truth to this equation from the Washington Post and other sources. Not that I like these sources, but there are things they can't hide. Melting Arctic ice is now pouring 14,000 tons of water per second into the ocean. If everything's melting, how do you have ice that's recovering faster in the winter? Only the surface area, I want to stress that. The volume is gone. It's about 90% down. All we have now is a change in how statistics are kept. So now the official record keepers, like NOAA and the rest, consider any area of Arctic Ocean that is 15% slush or more is considered ice pack. Is that really ice pack? No. It's still 85% ocean. But they call it ice pack so they can statistically hide the fact that the Arctic is completely imploding. So we have, again, 14,000 tons of water per second pouring into the ocean in the Arctic from melting ice. And let's stop there for a moment. Many ask, why is that a big deal? So the planet's warmer. We'll all be happier. We'll be able to expand further to the north. People don't consider the ramifications. The poles, the ice at the poles and the reflectivity. That's the temperature regulator for this planet. If the ice disappears, we are done. And climate engineering, in the attempt to hide it, to mask it, is making the situation far worse, not better. Once the ice is gone and the reflectivity, ice reflects 90% of the sun's incoming thermal radiation, thermal heat, from the polar regions. When that ice is gone, the seawater absorbs about 90%. Runaway event. We're already in a runaway climate collapse. That's the fact of the matter. Can't be hidden much longer. And again, I want to stress this. Climate engineering, in the attempt to hide what's unfolding, is actually further fueling the fire. One more excerpt from this report of the 14,000 tons of water pouring into the ocean per second in the Arctic. New scientific survey has found that the glaciers of the Arctic are the world's biggest contributors to rising sea levels, shedding ice at an unprecedented rate. Driven by glacier clusters in Alaska, Canada, and Russia, the vast ice sheet and the vast ice sheet of Greenland, the fast warming Arctic is outstripping the entire ice continent to the south, Antarctica, for now. However, the biggest problem is that both ice regions appear to be accelerating their losses simultaneously, suggesting that we could, and there's no could, there's no may, there's no might, tired of these reports pretending what's already happening could, may, might happen. It's already happening. But this report states we could be in for devastating sea level rise at a much faster rate than predicted in future decades. Not decades, it's much closer. Let's stop there again. While so many are trumpeting the latest engineered winter events in the U.S., like so-called Winter Storm Ebony, what is the state of the ice in the Arctic and Antarctica overall? As of December 26, 2018, sea ice extent in both poles is yet again at record low levels for this time of year. And don't look for any headlines on this. There are none. Official sources do not want this information known. One must actually examine the daily ice extent graphs. And that's what they state right now. Back to the U.S. Again, there is so-called Winter Storm Ebony, the latest creation of the climate engineers. Consider the absurdity of a so-called winter storm that is getting its moisture from the record warm Gulf of Mexico. A so-called winter storm with a warm side to it, as stated by the paid disinformation actors at the Weather Channel and other climate engineering cover-up disinformation sources. Even the geoengineers' bombardment of Gulf of Mexico moisture with patented chemical ice nucleation elements could not make so-called Winter Storm Ebony perform as it was scheduled to. The flooding, the record rains will continue in parts of the U.S. East. The climate engineers need abundant moisture to carry out the chemically nucleated cool downs. Don't eat the snow. That statement is not a joke. And for those who reside in the climate-engineered cool-down zones in the U.S., most consistently the heavily populated zones of the eastern U.S., if you think that these engineered winter zones are in any way a reflection of the global scenario, think again. For the record, November 2018 was the 407th consecutive month of above-average global temperatures. Where is the most anomalously less warm region on the entire planet over recent years? The eastern half of the U.S. lower 48. Imagine that. The climate engineers will continue to do their best to mask the true state of climate and biosphere collapse from the largest population of Americans, thus keeping the climate division and confusion and infighting going until total collapse occurs. What about California's rain, or all too often the lack of it? West Coast rain continues to be controlled by the climate engineers. This is not my opinion. Rather, it's a verifiable fact that is inarguably visible for anyone that bothers to examine the daily satellite images of the geoengineering operations occurring off the North American West Coast. It has to be seen to be believed. It's happening every single day. It looks like something from another planet over our oceans. Massive grid patterns of aerosol spraying every day. Moving on, from multiple sources, dust threatens Utah's greatest snow on Earth, quote. It's what they call Utah's snow. Excerpt from that report, a new University of Utah study analyzed the impacts of dust deposition on an alpine study plot in Alta, Utah, in the Wasatch Mountains. For the first time, researchers measured dust in the air and in the snow simultaneously. The additional sunlight absorbed by the dust darkened the snow surface and led to snow melting far earlier. The report states this, global snow is in decline, and it's not just from a warming climate. It's more complicated than that. Snow is also getting darker, said one of the report's authors. We know that in some places, aerosols, remember what those are, the tiny particulates in the atmosphere, exactly what climate engineers disperse, aerosols, nanoparticulates, been over that this broadcast. Aerosols are impacting water resources, and it's having this long-term climactic impact. We also know that deposition levels are unlikely to decrease in the future. Why would they decrease when pollution and climate engineering are increasing? They can't decrease. Reports finishes with this, while we don't yet understand the exact magnitude of the impact, we know that dust warrants more attention. The climate community, the academic community, pretending they don't know anything. They don't see the geoengineering elephant in the room. They don't acknowledge the particulates being expelled from climate engineering operations. And as I stated earlier in this broadcast, coal fly ash, likely base material for the climate engineers, climate engineering fueling the overall warming of the planet, temporary toxic cooling at the cost of a worsened overall warming, and poisoning all of us in the process, along with the entire web of life. Again, drought-causing dust. And none in academia will admit to the drought-inducing geoengineering aerosol spraying operations. Search geoengineering creates drought. But better yet, search this. Engineered drought catastrophe. Investigate. Moving on, another new headline. Droughts boost emissions as hydropower dries up. This is from Stanford University. When hydropower runs low in a drought, Western states tend to ramp up power generation and emissions from fossil fuels, according to a new study from Stanford University. Droughts caused about 10% of the average annual carbon dioxide emissions from power generation in California, Idaho, Oregon, and Washington between 2001 and 2015. Consider this report. This is extremely important. It's one more way in which climate engineering fuels the overall fire of the global planetary meltdown. Cutting off our precipitation from every Western state listed right here. And in 2009, I spoke in front of the California State Energy Commission in Sacramento. I met with their top scientists, passed on data to those scientists at that meeting. I brought this up before, but at that meeting, the California Department of Energy authorized the purchase of a $200,000 spectrometer from Scripps Institute to analyze the chemical composition and origin of particulates in the atmosphere that was costing the state 20 to 40% of its rainfall. That meter, which was purchased at that meeting, authorized, has never been seen from since, swept under the rug. That fire put out so many glaring red flags, climate engineering cutting off our precipitation, the California Energy Commission initially recognizing that, but then sweeping the whole issue under the rug. Whoever was threatened, however that fire was put out, it happens again and again and again because we have almost none in academia that are willing to band together, stand up, and tell the truth, and that must change or we have no chance. Running out of time in this broadcast, I want to cover a few more headlines. on our collapsing biosphere from abc.net.au in Australia. The Bureau of Meteorology warns Australians to expect extreme heat waves after Christmas. Next follow-up headline since this first headline. Extreme heat wave in Australia. Catastrophic fire conditions as temperature records shattered. That's what's happening in Australia. Don't hear many in America that are underneath winter, engineered winter storm Ebony talking about that. No, they're just trumpeting snow falling in a few places from chemically nucleated materials being sprayed into our atmosphere. In Australia, asphalt roads are melting, literally. And a reminder on the report I covered in last week's broadcast, over a third of the entire population of Australia's flying foxes died in a single day from the record-shattering heat. Pressing on. While our oceans continue to superheat, while also simultaneously being poisoned and polluted, and thus dying by the day, what are some in the human race most interested in? Destroying what life is left in the seas in search of a shiny yellow metal. Consider this new headline report from ScienceAlert.com. Quote, a gold rush at the bottom of the ocean could be the final straw for ocean ecosystems. From the report, as the world's population scales to ever greater heights, a growing demand for resources is driving humans to new lows. In the next few years, commercial mining on the deep ocean floor could become a real possibility. Several permits have already been issued. That's what they're doing in Washington. Loot, plunder, and pillage what's left of the planet until we hit the wall at full velocity. The oceans are dying by the day. I want to get to a few more headlines on that note. From multiple sources, this new report, which should come as no surprise, oil and dispersants can help kickstart red tides, say scientists. Not can, they are. This year's massive red tide bloom on Florida's coast have been made more severe because of oil spills and the use of dispersants to, quote, clean up the spills. Dispersants don't clean up the spills. The dispersants make the situation exponentially more toxic still, but they hide the problem for a little while. That's what the power structure is about. That's what climate engineering is about as well. One part of climate engineering. There are many more aspects to it. But again, everywhere we see industrialized, militarized civilization trying to hide the decimation it has caused, it is creating exponentially more devastation. How many headlines do we see linking the unimaginably toxic red tides to oil spills and oil dispersants? We didn't see that. No, we see headlines that try to pretend it's some sort of natural phenomenon that comes and goes. That couldn't be further from the truth. And there's many other factors with this, the nitrates in the water and so forth. But bottom line is, human activity, anthropogenic activity decimating the planet, and how many people, how many sources, how many sites, how many individuals do we see pretending this is all some sort of grand hoax, that everything's fine on planet Earth, while in the meantime we have beaches covered with dead sea life, animals dying everywhere? How bad does it have to get before we realize we are fighting for our lives? Moving on, how dire is the current state of Earth's oceans? The next headline report is incredibly dire. The unvarnished frontline facts paint an even more dire and immediate conclusion than this report even states. The report says this: we have 10 years to save the seas, or life on Earth will become impossible. The report states this: hundreds of millions of people could, may, might, starve after toxic chemicals kill all sea life. There's no could, no may, no might. It's not just toxic chemicals. It's not just plastic. It's not just the destroyed ozone layer, which geoengineering is the biggest part of, that's killing plankton, which is dropping the food chain out of the ocean. It's not just Fukushima. It's the warming oceans. It's the thawing deposits on the seafloor of methane hydrate, which generally is accompanied with hydrogen sulfide, deoxygenating the oceans. They're becoming hypoxic and anoxic, low and no oxygen. So many factors killing our oceans by the day, and no one yet seems concerned. The report states this: by 2030, 90% of the world's coral will be dead, and a quarter of the remaining fish in the oceans will no longer be able to reproduce. This is woefully short of how bad it is. We are already 90% depleted on the global pelagic fish populations. 90%. We're not going to be eating fish much longer. 15 years after that, the report states, unless drastic action is taken, acidity levels will have increased so massively they will trigger a, quote, cascade collapse of ocean ecosystems, with most fish, birds, and sea mammals wiped out within 5 years. It's already happening. It's not somewhere off on the horizon. It's happening now. What's termed as Canfield Ocean, a lifeless, superheated, stratified, oxygenless ocean, is unfolding right now. The report finishes with this. This spark, i.e. the dying oceans, will cause the terrestrial ecosystem failure and very possibly the end of life on Earth as we know it. That's what the report states. Search mass animal deaths for 2018. Search that title, mass animal deaths for 2018. It's a sobering glimpse of what is occurring around the globe. The site is run by a spiritual organization, but that's not the point. The point is the data that they post. That's what matters. From multiple sources, only a sample of what's happening around the globe, but that sample is, again, unimaginably sobering. It's truly heartbreaking for me when I stop to ponder that what I've been so fortunate to have witnessed in miraculous ocean ecosystems during years of solitary diving is now largely gone. The awe-inspiring Great Barrier Reef in Australia, the vast kelp forests around Australia, the incredible undersea world around New Zealand, where in the past I viewed unimaginable sea life, clusters of 5 to 10 pound lobsters, as many as 50 or 60 in a single group, all literally standing on top of each other, attempting to hide below submerged rock escarpments where I often discovered them. Such abundance is now no more. While diving in remote locations in the Sea of Cortez, I've come face to face with Gulf groupers as big as a car. They look like a Volkswagen with fins. They're huge. They were never afraid. Such a massive fish, only feet from my face, staring at me as I look back, as curious of me as I was of them. Momentary undersea meetings between a man and monstrous fish, both at peace with the other. I've had the immense privilege of witnessing huge school of Dorado or Mahi-Mahi, an unimaginably beautiful and colorful fish, all circling around me for such long periods of time in the middle of a vast and remote sea, Sea of Cortez. It was as if they were showing off their incredible beauty. I can hardly bear the burden of knowing that what I have been witness to, I cannot share with my son or my daughter ever. To know the future that our children face should fill any rational person with unimaginable angst. But what are we to do with that? That deep angst. How are we to respond? Are we to give up? Are we to give in? Are we to sit the bench and just watch it happen? Here's the short answer. Never. We must never yield in the battle to salvage what is yet left of Earth's once thriving web of life. This battle is the great imperative. It is our duty. The natural world has no voice except for us. So long as nature is willing to survive, so long as there is a single bat, bird, bee, fish, frog, anything left fighting for its survival, we must each do all we can to do our part to help them to survive, to help them to hang on. We must summon the strength to turn our angst into deep-rooted motivation, unwavering motivation, motivation to fight for the future of our children, of all children, in fact, of the entire web of life on this miracle planet that we were entrusted with stewarding. And if we stand together, unyielding, we may yet accomplish profound good, even at this late hour. Make your voice heard in this critical battle to sound the alarm. Waking the masses to what is unfolding is the only way forward, as the Milgram experiments made clear, that only when there is enough social support will people start to exercise their sense of morality and virtue and willingness to fight for the common good, the greater good, the good of all. We must stand together. We must reach a critical mass. Share credible data from a credible source. Make every single day count. Again, I wish to express my deepest and undying gratitude to each and every individual that is doing their best in this epic battle to preserve and protect life on planet Earth. Until next week, this is Dane Wigington with GeoengineeringWatch.org.